Jude and I welcome you to Sun Devil Sunday at Tempe Church of Christ. We're going to be in Colossians today as we wrap up our series there. Galatians, Ephesians, Philippians, Colossians, as you turn over there to chapter 3. So excited for the start of another semester, and we anticipate great things with what God will do on the campus and extending the campus towards us as we reach out and seek to bless students. Thank you, Hannah and Claire and Jenna and all of those who are making that possible this year. Before we begin, I wanted to make one quick announcement, and that is that 2 weeks from today, we will be kicking off our community groups for the academic year. So if you have not signed up yet, you do not want to miss out. It's been a great time. Several of our families did kind of a beta test of this program over the last 6 to 8 months. And I would say that none of us knew each other extremely well before that. But now we're all very sad to see this group go in new directions so that we can open spaces to welcome new people in. So every other week, starting September 8th, these groups will meet on Sunday afternoon or evening. And it's just a great chance to get to know each other better and encourage each other as we walk with God. Pursuing life with God together, that is our mission and vision here at the Tempe Church of Christ. So here we are, celebrating the start of a new season of life. And I'm just very impressed as I meet a lot of our young college students, because I think, I want to be a lot of these people when I grow up. When I was 17, 18 years old, I still had a lot of growing to do, and I still do. My first year of college was highly transformative, and that's why I'm so grateful for ministries like the one this church is a part of. Because such a critical time of life. So I was moving out on my own for the very first time. I didn't realize when I drove myself down to Arkansas from Kansas City, I was never going to move back home again. That wasn't the plan, that's just how it worked out. There are these hinge points in life, right? You don't always know them as you're stepping out into them, although college is a pretty big one, and so you can anticipate some changes ahead. But that first year, wow, what a year. The night before finals, my very first semester, not my favorite night. Freshman Michael Chafin, sleeping in his dorm like the good young man he is, gets a call on my phone, and my friend Rachel wants to be baptized. I should have been really excited, but I was sleepy, and I didn't really want to go, but she's my friend, I'm going to go. That was kind of the first sign, like, You're not in the greatest place right now, Michael. You don't want to go see this person get baptized. So I go. Immediately after the baptism, instead of being overjoyed with this picture of salvation, the second sign that I'm not in the greatest place is my mind goes immediately to, I think I can get back in time to get a better parking space. And so I get out of the church building in a hurry. And I'm just joyfully driving, envisioning this parking space that will not leave sap from pine trees on my beautiful car. And I get passed unexpectedly by another of my friends who was at the baptism. And so despite the construction zone ahead and the one-lane road that this will turn into and the oil that is there and now the rain drizzling down, I think we should race. That was the third sign that you're not in the best state of mind right now. So to make an embarrassing story short, trying to pass and there's no room, I see curbs on this side and I overcorrect and go into the lobby of a building. And my beautiful blue car was totaled. And had I been able to look into the rearview mirror of that car, which wasn't there anymore because my friend had knocked it off with their face, I would have looked at myself and said, "You have betrayed yourself. You have stabbed yourself in the back. Your car is done. You now get to make this joyful phone call to your dad and tell him all about it." One of my favorite characters of all time from The Office, Dwight Schrute, he says things like this: "Would an idiot do this thing? If the answer is yes, I do not do that thing." I did it anyway. If only life were so simple, right? If only we could look at it and be very clear and just kind of step back and objective and say, not wise, not good, this will only end in heartache. Life would be better for everyone, wouldn't it? Paul is concerned that the Colossians are experiencing this mission drift. They're behaving unwisely. They had set out with these goals, these really lofty goals of Christ-likeness and bringing the kingdom of heaven to earth. But they've since lowered their sights. So in Colossians chapter 3, Paul is trying to encourage them to think of that beauty that first called them to Jesus. The beauty that called them into this walk with their Savior. Colossians 3, 1 through 4, it says this: "If you were raised with Christ, look for the things that are above, where Christ is sitting at God's right side. Think about the things above, don't think about the things on earth. You died, your life is hidden with Christ in God. And when Christ, who is your life, is revealed, then you also will be revealed with him in glory." The excitement of the book of Colossians that we're supposed to feel, but we sometimes miss this, is that this Christian life has the power to undermine all of the things that God stands against. When we walk with Jesus, good things happen. Bad, evil, it loses out because wisdom begins to win. You see, we're created with such potential to undermine all of those things that make this world the place we don't want it to be. But the potential cuts both ways. And so we set out with lofty goals, and we're going to change the world, right, for the better. But somewhere along the way in life, we forget to ask questions like Dwight does, and we make less than wise choices. And we contribute sometimes to the very thing we said, that's what I was going to end. And so Paul sets these two lists out before this church, these subversive behaviors, these signs that we've forgotten about the good stuff that we initially set out for. And they sound something like this: put to death the parts of your life that belong to the earth, these sexual immoralities, moral corruptions, lust, evil desire, and greed, which is idolatry. Set aside these things such as anger, rage, malice, slander, obscene language. Don't lie to each other. Take off that old human nature with all of its practices. We can probably all picture that moment in our life where we settled for less. We wanted something up here, and it was beautiful, and it was ideal, but our reality didn't match. Painful moments where we were the one who betrayed ourselves. These things that Paul mentions, they're these sideways energy suckers, right? It's like, if we would just stay on task, things could be good. And we get caught up in these type of behaviors, and they steal our energy, and they go towards less things. We're resurrection people, right? We are people who believe, and we hope for the best possible outcome that this world could possibly imagine. And yet every once in a while, we find ourselves angry, slandering, using obscene language and things like this. And we find that we are prolonging death's shelf life when we do things like that, because we are participating in all of the things that make death real. And we want to change the world, but before we can subvert these really large systems of injustice that are very, very real, we have to be mindful of the things that subvert our own souls and how we tend to lose track of those little things that loom large in the big picture of life. I liked this line by Bud Osborne. He sings on the streets of Portland, and he wrote this: "Culture's teaching 10,000 ways, ways to die before we're dead." I like it, but I don't. I like it because it's true, and I've lived that. I've contributed to my soul's death when I wanted life. And so we ask ourselves, Paul says, is Christ in those things? And we wonder, well, maybe not, but why would I want to find Christ anyway? We find ourselves wondering, you know, maybe God was holding out on us with all of these don'ts. Jesus' life, his was not the most glamorous of lifestyles, was it? homeless, transient, self-sacrificing, turning the other cheek, walking extra miles. I can do without that most days. And yet, there's something about this Jesus who continues to draw the attention of the world and say, but couldn't life be better if? Aren't things more beautiful when they go like this? There's no denying the pain and heartache of the alternative either. And we have been hurt, and we have been the ones who caused others pain. And so we come together on Sundays, and we try to imagine and picture and cast vision for what could life be? What would the world be like if Jesus showed up in every city, even without the healings and the miracles and the bread and all of that great stuff? And Paul says it's something like this. It's holy and loved. It is compassionate. It is kindness and humility, gentleness and patience. That is what the world can be like if we were to be a little more like Jesus. It is tolerance. It is forgiveness when I have a complaint against anyone because I know that the Lord is willing to forgive me. It is love that binds me together in unity and peace with other people where before I only knew strife. And I think, yeah, I'd like more of that, please, soon, now. And it has to start small with me, because small encompasses everything. This series, we've been calling it Jesus is All. He's first, he is all. Small people can do some big things, can't they, when Jesus is in that? I'm really interested in what's happening in Hong Kong right now. I can't pretend to understand all of the political implications of it. But when you look at a picture of a human chain of people stretching across an entire city, any one of them by themselves, not meaning much. But they take the hand of the person next to them, and all of a sudden, they are a force to be reckoned with. Now take the gospel, the good news of Jesus, and it steps into this world where people are saying, we've had enough. And it can't be coercive, but don't get it on you, because it is corrosive. The gospel just automatically, when we begin to live into it, starts breaking down all of the things that we hate. Some of the things we don't like about our own self. And I don't know if you're like me, but I prefer the big Death Star moments, the fireworks. If we just hit this one target, the whole thing goes. That would be great if life worked like that. But the gospel paces itself, and it works slowly and methodically, one person at a time, as love overflows, as Jesus is seen in new places and new ways. And so we pay attention to these small things that key us in on the sinister motives that would undermine this beautiful goal of life with God together. I loved the way that Jenna and the girls who went to Asia over the summer talked about the friends they made there and how it was kind of like a conversion by osmosis. Just being in the presence of people who were changed by Jesus somehow began to change the people around them. There's this really confusing line in here about, it talks about your life is hidden with Christ. And there is probably a lot we could say about this, but I think at the very least we can say this. That it's not some trick or spiritual game of Marco Polo where God has taken a piece of us and run away and is hiding. But simply put, if I find Jesus, that is where I will find the best version of myself as well. And I want to find that person because I don't think I've seen them yet. If I can find Jesus, the best parts of me will be waiting there for me. And Satan will whisper, you're missing out. The fun is over here. And Jesus faithfully says, no, I'm holding on to you. Your life is hidden with me, and when you are revealed in glory, what a glorious day that will be. Value beyond measure is what you are with God. That is the beauty of the Christian life. I just began reading this book. It was famous, popular a few years ago, All the Light We Cannot See. And it's about a little girl and a young man in Paris during World War II. The little girl's blind. Her dad works at a museum. And at the museum are all of these priceless artifacts as the Nazis are marching towards Paris. And so this museum in Paris, they're gathering all of these items to keep them safe. And one of these rare items is a blue diamond. So how are they going to keep this diamond safe? They make facsimiles of the diamond, and they send them out in different directions. One of them is real. We don't know which one. Could be any of them. The person carrying the fakes don't know if theirs is fake or real. It's hidden with them, and they're traveling away. We are made in the image of Christ, the most beautiful life with God ever lived, Jesus, this optimal human experience. And it seems to me that it's as if God takes all these fake diamonds and he molds us into this image of Jesus and he says, you're actually not a fake at all. You're the real thing. You are beautiful. You are valued. Our attempts to make life meaningful without Jesus tend to do the opposite, though. We take a valuable thing and we make it into something fake. I can't imagine any sin that I've ever committed that wasn't a misuse or an abuse of the good that God tried to hand to me. And I said, no, I've got a better idea. Here's how this works. But God says, no, I see it for what it is. And you have made it into something not beautiful, but it will be beautiful again, because that is what life with God is about. And so the search for things above, life with God, fullness, all of those things that we want, healing, God himself, and by the way, he wants to be found. That is what waits for us. That is what God is calling us into. Here's the invitation. Do you hear the call? So the search is on. May you be blessed in your pursuit of being found by God and finding him and living out of that presence. Let's worship.